sadly, other families are going through what your family has gone through. I want to bring into the conversation two women that are dedicated and focused to ending state violence against black women. I want to bring in Nakisha Lewis, who's a philanthropic strategist and social justice advocate, and one of the founding members of Black Lives Matter New York City, and was one of the lead organizers in the Justice for Sandy campaign. Good morning, Nakisha.
For having me.
Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Courtney.
Good morning, Sam. So good to hear your voice.
And I also want to bring into the conversation Andrea Ritchie, who is the founder of the In Our Names Network and also the author of Invisible No More, Police Violence Against Black Women and Girls. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning, Kat, and good morning, Shantae. I've been holding you in my heart for the last few months, so it's really great to hear your voice.
Good morning, Queen. Thank you so much.
Nakisha, I want to start with you and talk about some of the organizing that happened in response to the murder of Sandra Bland. There was outreach and messaging directly to Black sororities. Why?
Yeah, well, so I think it's really important as we have this conversation to set the backdrop, right? So a lot of people know when they think about Black Lives Matter and they think about all the street protests that really erupted in 2014, you know, sometimes it's hard to remember that we were being inundated with the killings of black men and black boys for several years, right? And so, but it doesn't mean that black women and girls weren't also victims of violence. Mm-hmm. But there really wasn't this groundswell, right? There wasn't really this outrage or people taken to the streets in our names. And so, you know, when we enter, you know, this moment in 2015, when Sandy is murdered, there's like this almost like this gut-wrenching aha moment for me, and I think for many other women, black women around the country in my age bracket, right? Because we're literally the same age or, you know, a few years older or younger than Sandy. And we really saw ourselves, I mean, I can speak for myself, I saw myself in her, right? Mm-hmm. Went to college, like people tell you to do, you know, joined a historically black sorority. Supposedly that makes you some kind of, you know, special elite for those of us who hold that in our communities. And, you know, you're supposed to be somewhat protected, right? And I think that it was a wake-up moment for folks to understand who consider themselves, in our folks in our community, who consider themselves exempt from this violence, right? Mm. Who believe that only certain types of black people, right, can be actually harmed by the police or other actors of the state. And, you know, I think so Sandy was outspoken. She was brilliant. She was funny and she loved her people. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that was, you know, Sandy's murder was created a bit of a tipping point or a turning point rather for some of us. And so along with a couple other sisters who were based in New York at the time, we were just like, is there something we can do? Right. And so we just started holding rituals of remembrance, you know, vigils, doing a lot of the same things that we had done as black women. But then it was really in, you know, at the very top of 2016 when we found that Brian Encina was, you know, indicted on charges of perjury. Mm-hmm. And me with no legal background, I was like, oh, well, doesn't that mean that we can, like, go back and revisit some of that stuff that they were saying or that they were throwing out in 2015? My roommate, who's also a soror of mine at the time, is an actual attorney. And so she started explaining the legalese to me and the whole concept of, you know, fruit of the poisonous tree and all of that. And so mm-hmm. I said, well, I think, you know, I think we should do something, but also can we do something a little bit more permanent, right? Because, you know, we didn't want to just be talking for the sake of talking or protesting for the sake of protesting. You know, we were like, let's outreach to these other sororities. You know, January is the time of anniversaries, like founding anniversaries for several sororities and historically black fraternities. And we just kind of use the moment, right? I think as organizers always do, use that time to say, hey, let's reach out to our sororities and figure out how we can, at least in this moment where there's some additional attention, you know, on Sandy's story, let's raise some ruckus with, you know, organized black women around the country, right? Sororities are almost like a natural organizing ground. And so that was the beginning. That was like where the thought generated from. And then it grew, right? It went much bigger. And we wanted to also be intentional about, you know, honoring and lifting up the sorority to which Sandy belonged, right? Which is Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated. And those sisters have been amazing. And you know, we built a coalition of women who belong to sororities and who wanted to, you know, wanted to make our voices heard in a collective way. But then also we followed a bit of a blueprint that my then roommate Ifeoma Ike had established when she created the Congressional Caucus on Black Men and Boys. If folks remember that in the wake of Trayvon Martin's murder, lots of folks went to Capitol Hill and they lobbied Congress and just, you know, really made it a great national issue and pretty much like a crisis, right? So that Black men and boys were in crisis in this country and that we needed a congressional body where like, we could, you know, bring potential policy solutions where we could hear testimony. As we know now with so many other fights that are brought to Capitol Hill, it was a really important strategy. And trying to really either overturn policy that negatively impacts us, or to create new policy that will keep us healthy and alive, right? Like, you know, dreaming about other solutions to policing and community that don't actually include police, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of that is meted out on Capitol Hill. And so this group of us that includes, you know, Shantae and Sandy's sister, Sharon Cooper, this group of us, you know, in pretty record time, connected with members of Congress who are also members of historically Black sororities and their staffers, and they jumped on it and they championed, you know, this issue with us and eventually created the Congressional Caucus on Black Women and Girls, which there hadn't been one. There hadn't been anybody who thought to create one. Yet at the time, there were some almost like 450 or so congressional caucuses, which are comprised of members of both the Senate and Congress, and they had caucuses on things like cut flowers, but I never thought that Black women and girls also deserved a space in this, you know, in this political debate. We wanted to make sure that that happened, and we knew that, you know, sororities sometimes can put some pressure on folks, right? There's some people when they start to show up en masse, they get folks to move, and we're really happy that that.
Nikki,
I think that. Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah, we lost you for a minute, but go ahead and go ahead.
Well, I was just wrapping up here to say that, you know, the work continues, you know, it doesn't stop with a congressional caucus and it doesn't stop with just, you know, sorority standing up. I think that we all got to keep going, not just in honor of Sandy, but, you know, one of the things that she told us to do is make sure that we stay woke,
right?
So, yeah, time to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Andrea, I want to bring you into the conversation, and thank you so much, because I think I just realized that I interrupted your vacation that we talked about being so important.
I could not be think of anything more important to be doing right now and more grateful to be doing. But if you hear cicadas in the background, that's what's happening.
So, Andrea, you've been doing work around state violence of Black women and girls for 25 years now. Can you talk about the legacy of Sandra Bland within this 25 years, like the work prior and what the work looks like now? How did her murder impact the public debate around state violence and Black women and girls?
I mean, it really brought above the surface something that had been happening and has been happening since Black women were dragged to this country in chains 400 years ago, and continues to happen long after her death. And in fact, as her mother, Geneva Reed Veal, talks about, was happening the very month that she died. Five Black women died in jail the same month as Sandy. But that had just not, despite the best efforts of groups like Delta Sigma Theta Sorority and the National Council of Negro Women, groups like Insight, groups of family members who had been organizing around individual Black women's experiences, from Eleanor Bumpers to Taisha Miller to LaTanya Haggerty, just had not hit the same level of national attention. And it's the very organizing by Sandra's family, including the incredible and I know incredibly painful work of making an HBO documentary, Say Her Name, Sandra Bland, of bringing that her experience forward, and the work of organizers like Nikisha and others in bringing her name forward, that really pushed our nation to understand, or the U.S. to understand, yes, black women experience driving like all black too. And it's been true for a long time. The group that was stopped by police most often in the year before Mike Brown was killed in Ferguson, Missouri, was black women, more than any other demographic group. Black women are also killed by police. In fact, research also out of Missouri shows that across the country, black women are the group most likely to be killed by police when they're unarmed. But they're, you know, this is not the main narrative that we talk about when we talk about state violence, police violence, deaths in custody. You know, a year after Sandra Bland, or sorry, last year, just over a year ago, Deborah Lyons, mm-hmm. a 51-year-old black woman, grandmother, also died, was found hanging in a Harris County jail in Texas. Pamela Turner was killed by police in Texas mm-hmm. just a few months ago. These stories have been happening and continue to happen, but what changed with Sandra's story, and thanks so much to the work of her family, her sorority sisters, and the movement that emerged at that time, we now know that black women experience driving while black, that black women are killed by police, that black women die in police custody. And we are now organizing not only around their cases and cases like of women like Charlena Lyles or Kiwi Herring or Shakisha Clemens or DeCynthia Clemens, but we're also now starting to organize more around, have those stories and those experiences not just be new names that we say and new stories that be driving the ways we organize. That's why this is the third year in a row we've done a National Mama's Day bailout to bail black women out of jail so they don't die in a jail cell, to make sure they don't lose their children, their jobs, their homes, their employment. It's why, as Nikisha was just saying, we are organizing to get police out of situations where they're doing harm to black women and girls. So for instance, you know, in October, the same year Sandra died, many of us were galvanized by the picture of at her school by a school resource officer and dragged across the floor. Now organizers are organizing around individual cases like hers, but also just organizing to get police officers out of school so that doesn't ever happen again. Right. People are organizing to stop racial profiling and driving while black across the country in Sandy's name and in the name of all black women and men and boys and girls and trans and gender nonconforming people who have been stopped by police like that. People are trying to come up with different ways to respond to people's unmet mental health needs and prevent them from reaching a crisis point in the name of women like Kaylin Moore, of Charlena Lyles, of countless other black women and girls who have been killed, or Cynthia Clements, who have been killed in those circumstances. And people are working to just decriminalize the kind of low-level offenses that bring police into contact with black women and girls and can result in death, whether it was the police killing of Margaret Mitchell, a grandmother who was homeless and walking down a street with her belongings in a shopping cart in LA in 1999, mm-hmm. or you know, folks who are experiencing policing and police violence and police death and police sexual assault in the context of enforcement and minor offenses every day. Groups are now saying we need to decriminalize poverty, we need to decriminalize presence in public spaces, we need to decriminalize all those minor offenses that give cops an excuse to get up in black women's faces in ways that, as it was in Sandy's cases, you know, wind up being deadly because there's an expectation of how black women must behave that if it's not met, will be punished up to and including death. So I think right. that the legacy in Sandra's name, we are doing so much, not only to demand justice in individual cases, but to demand conditions under which Sandra would still be with us today.
Right. And as I knew it would, the segment is ending much too quickly. Andrea, very quickly, give the website where people can learn more about that organizing, the In Our Names Network website.
Work.com, InOurNamesNetwork.com. And that'll take you to many other places and information, stories, resources, and history of organizing now and beyond.
And the last thing that I want to do is, we started with the cell phone audio of Sandy being pulled over, but she also had a blog where she tried to inspire her people. Sandy Speaks. And so we're going to exit on that note.
In Queens, it's Tuesday, March 31st, 2015. Hopefully you are up in Adam, doing something necessary to establish your queendom, your kingdom. Are you on your way to work? Are you on your way to class? Are you doing something productive that can change your life? It's all on you. It is your job to make your life better. Nobody is going to give it to you. We've seen that and we know that. You are in control of your destiny. So get out there, do something, and go be great.
We have been speaking to Shante Needham, the sister of Sandra Bland, Nakisha Lewis, philanthropic strategist and social justice advocate, and one of the founding members for Black Lives Matter NYC, and Andrea Ritchie, founder of the In Our Names Network and author of Invisible No More, Police Violence Against Black Women and Girls, about the legacy of Sandra Bland. Thank you, ladies, so much for your work and for joining us this morning.
Thank you, and have a blessed day.
You too.
Thank you. Be well.
Thanks so much for having us.
And that takes us to 8:31 in the morning. The program's up front. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiekert.
I'm Kat Brooks.
Coming up next, testimony has wrapped up in the ghost ship trial against Max Harris and Derek Almena. We're going to speak to one of the survivors of the ghost ship fire that claimed 36 lives about 2.5 years ago in Oakland, about what it's like watching the trial unfold, testifying, and making a new life in the aftermath of that tragedy. That's next.
After the news.